Hello, and welcome to the GSBA podcast, episode 6. Joining me is Angela Palm, GSBA Director for Policy and Legislative Services, and Scott Bierman, GSBA Legislative Services Associate. And I'm Justin Pauley, GSBA Director of Communications. Today's segment will focus on the second part of Advocacy 101, Advocacy 102, the federal budget. Scott's with us, and he has significant experience dealing with the federal budget during his time in D.C. as a congressional staffer on the Hill. So, Scott, tell us a little bit about your credentials on the Hill.
Well, Justin, thanks for having me. So after college, back in 2011, I moved up to D.C. and interned for Congressman Steve Womack of Arkansas. He's the current ranking member of the House Budget Committee. He was the chairman last year. Interned with him for a little while, and then shortly thereafter, I got a full-time position with Congressman Scott Ridgel from Virginia Beach, Norfolk, Newport News area. I was with him from 2011 to 2016 when he retired. And during that time, I worked mostly as a legislative assistant, which is the main legislative staff member for a congressman. If you go to D.C. and meet with a congressman's staff, you're more than likely meeting with the legislative assistant. And during my time there, he served on the Budget and Appropriations Committee. So we have a good background and knowledge. It was, for a while there, it was my daily life of working through the appropriations and budget process.
Great. That's fantastic. Well, let's get into it a little bit. Angela?
Okay. The first thing is, what is the federal budget year? We have obviously the calendar year, we have a state fiscal year, but I think the federal one is different.
Yeah, the federal one starts October 1st and will go to September 30th. And the fiscal year, so like for this year, it's, you know, we just started fiscal year 20 back in October. So it'll be basically the next year, the next calendar year number is what you start the previous calendar year. So like this year, like I said, 20, we start in October. Next year, we'll start 21 in October of 20.
Right. Okay. Now, listening to the news, it seems like we're always in a budget crisis. We're always working on the budget. We have continuing resolutions. We have budgets. We have appropriations. We have authorization levels. We have spending bills. Do they ever finish it? And is there actually a budget?
There are varying levels of finishing and varying levels of an actual budget.
Either it's done or it's not done.
So I think it's important to start here. As we talk about budget or appropriation, spending bills, to kind of figure out what exactly we're talking about. And there, you know, starting with the budget, there are two different kind of words things we can look at there. The president's budget, I think, starts this whole process off. It's due to Congress by February 5th. The first Monday of February every year. We'll go ahead and spoiler alert, that doesn't happen. this year's was in March. Some of President Obama's got into March. So this doesn't always come out on time. But the president's budget will look a lot like Governor Kemp's budget that he'll send to the General Assembly in January. It'll list out his policy goals. It'll list out where he wants to spend money in each of the different agencies and each of the different buckets in the discretionary pool. And obviously, you know, getting to a little bit deeper look at it, the federal budget is made up, federal spending is made up into discretionary and mandatory. Mandatory is mandatory, as the name implies. There's no, the president, the Congress don't have a say on that unless they make a policy change where it goes through law and they change something like Social Security or Medicare or Medicaid. Whereas discretionary, that's the funding for the agencies. That's NASA. That's the IRS. That's the Parks Department, things of the sort. So he'll send over his budget in February that will list his policy priorities. And again, those priorities will have things that, you know, you will hear, you know, take President Trump, for example, that he'll talk about in his speeches, border security, vets, the opioid crisis. But then it will also include the detailed numbers of kind of what he wants to send over to Congress and get funding for. Those a lot of times will be in the form of budget justifications, those are large binders that are sent to the Appropriations Committee. I remember my time up there, I would get a box full of binders that had the justifications for many of the agencies within the pool of committees that I was responsible for. Some of them can be as little as 75 pages. Some will be multiples of hundreds of pages that list out what each program does and why they want the money and the historical average of this is what we spent last year and the year before that, and this is what we're asking for this year, and this is why we're asking for that. So that's the president's budget. I know it's kind of a long-winded answer, but that's the president's budget. And when we get to the congressional budgets, the House and Senate budgets, those, for the most part, especially recently, those are mainly messaging documents. The president is not going to sign a House or a Senate budget. It's not a law that goes through the law process. The House will pass it. The Senate will pass one. What they use the budget for is to set the caps on the discretionary spending. So they will come out and say, okay, we have this year $1.1 trillion to spend in discretionary. And so you'll have to come up with that top line number so that the appropriations committees can start their work and start knowing, okay, this is how much we have to spend. This is what each bucket gets as they start the process. A lot of times, especially recently, the Congress has not passed a budget. The House may pass one, the Senate may pass one. They won't agree on one through conference. When they do that, what they'll come up with is something you see in the news a lot, going to your earlier point. You'll see a budget deal reached. Basically, that just means the House and the Senate came together and said, okay, for this year, we agree that we're going to spend $1.05 trillion. That's our budget. That's the top line number. That's what we're going to spend. From that point, that's where the Appropriations Committee takes over. Once they get that top line number, once they know exactly how much they can spend, they'll start going through and having subcommittee hearings and figuring out where they want to go.
Okay. So on my experience, at state level, not federal. So just to translate that into what I'm used to, at the state level, the agencies send their budget proposals to the governor's Office of Planning and Budget in the fall. The governor then issues his budget recommendations, has to be within the first 5 days of this General Assembly session, according to the Constitution. So he gives his budget recommendations to the General Assembly. But in Georgia, the governor controls the revenue estimate. So when he gives them his budget, he's also telling them how much money we have to spend.
Right.
At the federal level, however, the president says, okay, here are my priorities. Here's what I'd like to see spent. And Congress, at the budget level, determines how much money is going to be spent.
Right. Okay. Congress will decide. And if it's one of those budget deals that's kind of baked into something else, like you'll see every so often, then that will go to the president to sign, because it's usually including something else that the president needs to sign. But yeah, it's usually Congress that's deciding, okay, this is how much we're going to spend.
Okay. So then we finally get to the point where somebody is deciding how that money is going to be spent, how it's going to be distributed or spread around.
Right. And that's how we get to the appropriations process. Because like I said a minute ago, the budget process, especially in the House, but also in the Senate, is a messaging tool. It's where you bring folks in from the administration, you have them defend kind of what their top line budget number is. But you use it a lot to kind of put the priorities of the majority party through. I mean, we saw it in 2011 with the first Paul Ryan budget, you know, the commercials of Paul Ryan pushing your grandmother off the cliff. Those are messaging things that both parties will utilize either in promoting or attacking the opposing party.
Yeah. And by the way, Paul Ryan didn't actually push his grandmother off the cliff.
He did not. No. So, but when the budget process, like you said, was done, that's when we finally get to the Appropriations Committee. And the Appropriations Committee is that's where they're going to get down in the nuts and bolts. They're going to get down into the specific spending levels. The appropriations process is kind of different from Georgia. In Georgia, we have the one budget or the 2 days of the budget hearings, if you will, where they'll bring in the agency heads who'll defend their budget. They'll get 20, 30 minutes and then they'll walk away. And that's their input on the committee. Sometimes you'll get a subcommittee hearing to have a little bit more of a conversation. But in the Congress, in the U.S. Congress, what the process starts by each subcommittee, kind of, like I said, getting the big box of binders, like I mentioned earlier. And when they do that, they'll start planning their hearings. And these hearings are a little more intense than what we'll see here at the state level. They'll bring in the agency heads one by one, and they'll have a 2 or 3 hour hearing where they sit down and say, okay, here's your budget. here's your request. We have questions to ask. And they'll ask questions about specific numbers. You know, that's, you know, going back to my role as legislative assistant, you know, we would be the ones combing through these numbers to see if anything stood out, anything higher or lower than other, for something going on that we needed to take note of. This is your opportunity to ask the agency head about, hey, are you being good stewards of the money? Are you using the money correctly? Or are you using it the way we think you should be using it? Which is an important part of it. So each of the subcommittees, and there are 12 appropriation subcommittees who handle different chunks of the government, will start the process. And once they start down that road, that's when they start drafting the bill and drafting what it'll look like. Now, as y'all know, I mean, and I'm sure many of you know, there are no more earmarks in the House. There are no more bridges to nowhere anymore we're getting things sent back home, a pork barrel being sent back home. So they have to find creative ways to do that in the appropriations process.
So there are no more earmarks. There are only special creative projects.
There are. So, and then there are different ways. And so as you're going through the process of writing these bills and figuring out where spending is going, the committee chairman, the subcommittee chairman are always looking for ways to get input from the committee members. First and foremost, the committee members, they're on the committee. They kind of get priority of what they want in the bill outside of party leadership. They'll get priority of what they want in the bill. And there are ways around the earmark process. So you can't say, hey, I want to spend $50 million to build a new road in Atlanta. But you can say, we're going to give you $50 million. You should only use it in a major metropolitan area in the Southeast that has over 10 million people. Or okay, something like that. So you can get around that. And there's also a crazy tool they'll use is the committee report, which is not law. And it's not, you don't vote on the committee report separately. It's there. You can't amend it from the House floor. But it'll provide budget instructions to the agencies to say, hey, we gave you X amount of money for this. Now, we're not going to tell you exactly how to spend it, but it would really be nice if you spent it the way we want you to spend it.
If they're smart, they do that. Now, mentioned there's 12 subcommittees.
Yes.
Is that why we have so many bills and we end up with an omnibus if we get everything done at one time?
Right. Yeah. So in theory, each subcommittee will take their bill and they will have subcommittee hearings, like I mentioned earlier, and they'll have a subcommittee markup, and then they'll take that bill to the
floor. For the non-Washington people, what is a markup?
A markup is where you take the bill as written by the chairman. Or who, in terms of appropriations, we'll leave it at that. There's more to it, but written by the chairman in committee, bring it before the subcommittee where they have a chance to add amendments, strike language they don't like, change some of the numbers around they don't like. Subcommittee hearings or subcommittee markups and appropriations, for the most part, are short affairs. All the members have had a chance to have input on it so far to this point. So these are usually just a rubber stamp, a formality of, hey, we've all been here. We've all been along the process. We're all going to just move on and go. And it's kind of an unwritten rule that even if you're in the minority party, you let this bill go to full committee. And if you have an amendment you want to add, that's where you add it. You take it to the full committee markup where you kind of do the same thing. Except this time, these are much longer meetings. These are meetings that can last. I mean, I've seen subcommittee markups full committee markups of a particular appropriations bill go until midnight, start at 10 in the morning, go to midnight or so, where each member gets an opportunity to introduce an amendment, strike language, move money around as they see fit, and just kind of debate out the issues within the bill. But yeah, like going back to your point, there are 12 bills. So each subcommittee gets this opportunity to go through that. The way it's supposed to work is then after this full committee votes on these bills, it'll go to the full House floor where they'll kind of do the same thing again, where they'll have a debate and then each member will get an opportunity to offer an amendment. And then it goes to the Senate, if you're from the House to the Senate. This is obviously, as you can tell from what I was describing, it's a long process. It's not just we can get this done today. We'll get that done tomorrow. It'll be on the floor on Friday and we'll be voted by Friday night and it's done and we're over with. a lot of times these processes take a long time. I mean, even when you get it to the House floor, appropriations bills on the House floor take several days to finish. I mean, you're not going to vote on it all at once. You're going to have, you know, at times over 100 amendments that each amendment sponsor gets time to debate, get time to present debate. And then you have to do the other business of the House while you're doing that at the same time. So it can take a long time. So that's how we get to a point where we'll get to the end of the year, the fiscal year, and not have all 12 passed, because it just kind of takes a long time. So at that point, that's where you go to your question about an omnibus or minibus or things like that. They'll just stick a bunch of them in one bill and go, okay, here are six of them. This is a minibus. We're just going to vote on it. We've all agreed, you know, that these are going to be together. We're going to have an opportunity to debate. We're going to have an opportunity to add amendments, but we need to get these all together and go. On occasion, they'll put all 12 in one and go, okay, here's our omnibus. We're going. Sometimes when they get all 12, they don't like to take amendments and a lot of debate, but they just try to push it through. Usually that happens right around, I don't know, December 23rd or December 30th, where they want to go celebrate the holidays with their family. And so that, I mean, that's why we'll have those things. But also, kind of going back to the point of this takes a long time. There's a lot in these bills.
So if they don't agree and move forward with an omnibus or a minibus or 12 separate bills, that's when we end up with a continuing resolution to keep us moving.
Yeah, that's when we'll get a CR. It's what we're currently under right now. It's they agreed on one back in September. And I think in the news recently, there'll be another one moving forward to get us to late December. That just says, hey, we're going to keep funding the government at the levels we were funding it at, and we're just going to keep moving.
So right now, although we're in fiscal year 20, we're operating at the appropriation level of fiscal year 19.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just,
so I was going to ask, how long have we been? It just seems like from looking from the outside that we've been operating under continuing resolutions for years. You never hear about, okay, we finally passed the budget.
Yeah. So you will never hear we finally passed the budget.
Didn't they actually pass one last year?
They passed so back when we had there's the shutdown for a while. Uh-huh. After that, there was a minibus, because that was only a partial government shutdown. They already passed some of the 12.
So that was just a partial package.
That was just a partial package. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So you won't hear, very rarely will the news media come out and say the federal government has passed their budget. Like we'll hear in Atlanta, when mm-hmm. the General Assembly passes the budget, they'll come out and say they passed the budget, but you won't hear that in DC because it's broken up into so many parts. Mm-hmm. And some of them are more controversial than others. And it depends on the year, on which ones will get hung up and which ones won't. Legislative branch appropriations always gets through pretty quickly because there's nothing really controversial in it. But, you know, the fence, they try to get done pretty quickly for obvious reasons. But you know what? You know, if there's, you know, right now there's a conversation around SNAP funding. Well, mm-hmm. agriculture, where the SNAP will fall into, well, that might have a little bit of political heat to it. So that one will slow down and that will take a little bit of time. But yeah, you're not going to see any reports of, hey, they've, unless it's an omnibus, you're not going to see reports of that. But no, to answer your question, there have been over the last few years where we have passed either some or all of the appropriations bills. We're not just continually going through a CR
okay.
process.
That's good to know.
Oh, we mentioned the government shutdown. I know from having talked to you about your time in Washington that you've actually worked through several other government shutdowns. From here, looking at it, when I hear the government shutting down, then I think of everything just being locked up and nobody is there unless I assume the Pentagon and hope the Pentagon is still operating. But other than that, does everybody end up not working, or what does a government shutdown actually look like?
Yeah, so a government shutdown is a little bit of a misnomer because the government isn't shut down at this point. There will be parts of the government that they will shut the doors and nobody will come in. But other parts of the government, they have the opportunity to name people, designate employees as essential employees, basically, and they will continue to come into work. You know, when I was there for the shutdown in 2013, we had legislative branch had not been passed. The appropriation for legislative branch hadn't been passed. So we were technically shut down. The Congress was technically shut down, except for essential employees. Now, what does that look like? I mean, in our office, everybody was deemed essential. So we all still went to work. We went to work every day. Within the buildings, it was a little bit, you could tell a little bit of a difference. Some of the security entrances were closed, so it was just longer lines getting in. Just stuff like that. But I think a government shutdown just varies. It varies per president and kind of what they want to do, kind of what they want to press. We saw under the shutdown under President Obama, where he put barriers around some of the national monuments to kind of make it, I mean, for political purposes, make it hurt a little bit, try to get something done. And then we saw under President Trump where he didn't really follow some of those tactics. I think the biggest thing about the, you know, shutting down the government, quote unquote, a lot of times these people are still going to work like I did, still go to work. You're just not getting paid. Your paycheck's on hold until the agency that you're working for gets money to pay your paycheck. Now, every single time there's a government shutdown, the people who work for the government are made whole at the end of the day. They get their back pay. A lot of times people see it as a free vacation, a paid vacation. You just get to go out. Your paycheck comes in a little late. That's the big thing. I think when it comes to contractors, there's some question because they're not government employees. So there's always a debate about whether or not they should get back pay and how that's supposed to work and how to quantify that. But yeah, the shutdowns, they vary. I mean, they do vary. I mean, under the Obama administration, the shutdown was a full government shutdown, if I recall correctly. But under the Trump administration, it was only partial government shutdown because they had passed some of these 12 appropriations bills already. So some of them were already through and there was already funding there.
Okay. That it helps. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've sorted out now the difference in a budget and appropriations. And it seems like the difference in a continuing resolution to keep things moving in the shutdown is continuing resolution keeps you operating at the same level of revenue with everybody's agreement, the president and Congress.
Right.
A shutdown is we keep operating at the same level with some places working, some not, but everybody's still function. Everything is still functioning, basically.
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, some things will be closed.
Mm-hmm. But
it just depends on the appetite of the president. Okay.
So it's not necessarily about essential services.
There will be some essential services that are kept open just for, you know, the Pentagon's not going to close their doors and go, we'll see you Monday.
It's not like a federal holiday every day.
Right. Yeah. There are still places open. There's still places working.
All right.
It's the pay and kind of how they get around some of the paying the bills and stuff.
Yeah. Okay, one of the things in this process that has never made much sense to me is the role of the president's budget. Whenever the president releases his budget or whatever the term is, issues it, sends it, whatever it is he does with it, we often hear a lot of news stories around it. For instance, President Trump has, I think, in every one of his budgets proposed eliminating Title II funding for professional development. He has proposed a lot more funding around school choice, either for charters or for some sort of voucher program or other. And he's wanted to eliminate several other education programs. So whenever he does that, we all get really cranked up and talking about, oh, no, that would just, and why that would be wrong or why it would hurt student achievement. But when all is said and done, none of that stuff happens, or very little of it happens. So is the president's budget more of a policy statement where he's listing his policy priorities and really has no relationship to how we're going to spend money?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think, and obviously all of this depends on the president and the Congress and who's in power and who's in office and all that. But let's operate into the President Trump situation. Yeah, his budget is going to be for the most part, it's going to be a policy statement. It's going to say, you know, I really want to, you know, going back to school choice, I really want to push school choice and I'm going to put money in the budget for school choice. he probably knows, I think the folks at the Department of Education probably know, it's not going to go anywhere. Because once it gets over to the House, that's when the appropriators will start sitting down and going, okay, this is where we were last year. This is what where we're going to be. You know, you talked about zeroing out programs. Yeah, they take a hard look at, okay, what does it actually look like to zero out a program and completely cut off appropriations? A lot of times, it's interesting, a lot of times when the opposing party is in power of the president in the House, they will offer up the president's budget as an amendment to the budget process. And it is very funny. It's very interesting to watch the vote totals come in on that budget because, when I was there when President Obama was president, his budget would get between 0 and 5 votes on the House floor.
Even if the Republican majority in the House were proposing it?
Yeah, they would pull it. They'd okay. put it up to try to see. Basically, you would put it up to see what the Democrats would do, and nobody would vote for it. And I think the same thing would happen if the Democrats put President Trump's budget on the floor. I mean, you may get a handful, but it's going to fail overwhelmingly just because it's not the process. It's
right. But even when we've had the same party in Congress in power as the president, it typically, for instance, President Trump had a Republican House whenever he first went into the office. President Obama had Democrats in the House during part of his term. So even then, it doesn't seem like that they cared all that much about what the president said.
Yeah, President Trump's first year in office, he proposed major cuts to some of the programs you mentioned earlier in the Department of Education. And the House went along with it for the most part. The Senate was the one who came back and said, you know, we're not comfortable with this. We don't want to make those changes. We'll make these changes. And you kind of meet in the middle. And that's where they go to, you know, conference committee. Same as down here at the Capitol. I think it's more drawn out on the national stage. It's not a closed door meeting on a signy die. But there will be times when the House will take the president's budget and just go, we like this. Let's go for it. Now, is that going to happen a lot? No, because the people who are elected and who serve on the Appropriations Committee, they take it very, very seriously. They are put in a position to appropriate. They're there. I mean, it's a hard position to get. I mean, running for a spot on the Appropriations Committee is akin to running for your congressional seat. It's fundraising. It's making donations. It's
Who do they have to make donations to?
The party, the chair people, the speaker. If he has a PAC that he's raising money for, members in need and in jeopardy, who need some extra money, give it to them. I know when Rigel was going for appropriations, it was a months long process of, again, all the things you do when you run for office. You meet with the right people and you send out, notices and flyers with your credentials on it, and you make sure that your fundraising numbers are up to par, and then you make sure you've given enough to the party to make sure they're happy, to save your spot on the committee. And so those people, but my bigger point is those people take it very seriously. They take it seriously that they're kind of the start of the process of, hey, this is where the money comes from, and this is where it's going to go.
Okay. So you mentioned how hard it is to get on the committee. Who out of our delegation in Georgia has managed to achieve this?
Well, we're lucky. We have actually 2 members on the House Appropriations Committee. And not every state gets a member on the Appropriations Committee, and not a lot get 2. But we have Sanford Bishop, who from Georgia 2nd, down Columbus and South. He's on financial services with Tom Graves, who's the ranking member of financial services. But Congressman Graves is actually also a member of the Labor HHS subcommittee, which handles Department of Education appropriations.
Congressman Bishop, doesn't he chair one of the subcommittees too?
I'm not sure if he does.
I thought he had the agriculture subcommittee.
He might, yeah.
The rural, whatever that term is they use, rural...
Yeah.
Issues
in
agriculture. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. And what about budget? Do we have anybody on the budget committee?
Yeah, we have Rob Woodall on the House, and we have David Perdue in the Senate. They're both on the budget committees.
Okay. Is it hard to get on the budget committee?
It's not as hard. It's still considered an A committee, if you will. A committee you want to be on. You want to have the, you want to have a hand at crafting the, your messaging document for your party. Mm-hmm. But it's not as hard as appropriations.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And if anybody has forgotten earlier, when we were talking about the difference in budget and appropriations, the budget committee's main task is setting the spending level, basically the revenue limit of what we're going to do.
Right. And that number obviously will go, as we are consistently talking about deficits and debt, and that number always goes above the projected revenues that we'll bring. I think this year, or FY 2019, we had brought in $3.5 trillion in revenue and had $4.4 trillion in spending. So roughly $1 trillion in deficit spending.
Okay, on that happy note, on the next podcast, we're going to talk about what we expect to see in the next legislative session. So that should be interesting. We might actually have some expectations by then.
We'll see.
All right. Scott, is there anything that you think we might have missed or anything you'd add to those who are listening?
No, I mean, I think we covered most of it. I mean, I would kind of go back to I've said this kind of in private a bunch of times, and a few people have heard me say this, but I think when we talk to congressional offices and staffers, I think the role that the committee staff plays and the legislative staff of each individual member plays is a lot bigger than you would think. It's they're pivotal in kind of how the office works and what the congressperson knows. So just always remember that, especially when these appropriations requests come up, because you can call them and talk to them about these things. And they're the ones who are sitting down in these meetings and talking about this stuff.
Yeah, great. I think that's actually a podcast that we could go into for another 30, 45 minutes for a whole separate section at one point is actually working with the staff and how to be effective. But we'll get into that another time.
Yeah, I think we may have some news on something around that coming up here in the next few weeks.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Well, Scott, thank you for sharing. We appreciate it. We appreciate your experience. And we obviously appreciate you being on our staff. Feel free to contact Scott in the office if you do have questions about the federal budget. And thank you for being with us for this installment of the GSBA podcast. For more episodes and information on GSBA podcasts, visit gsba.com or search GSBA in Apple Podcasts, Google Play Podcasts, or Spotify on any mobile device or computer.